the only place for local talk every morning with Kurt and Anthony. News Talk WVMT.
Welcome back to the Morning Drive, everybody. Kurt and Anthony here on this Monday morning, just starting the week out. And joining us online now is Ben Kinsley from Campaign for Vermont. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on with us again. And as we wind down this legislative session, Ben, as you well know, a lot of big issues out there, and probably the biggest one, we've talked about it a lot, is the property tax, education finance, and what we're all looking at for property tax increase. I guess it's been whittled down from 20% down to somewhere around 17 or 18%, but it's still massive. But what you have written about recently is small schools and this feeling that small schools are part of the problem, and that there some small schools across the state have just a tiny number of students, and there's a feeling like that's part of the answer is to maybe do away with some of the small schools across the state. And you say that is not the answer, and that the data does not support that, right?
That's right. Yeah, I think, we had looked at this back in 2014 pretty closely during the Act 46 discussions. And I would say that the conversations that are happening in Montpelier now are strikingly similar to the conversations that happened leading up to Act 46. And, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, legislators are spending their energy in places that is going to have the most impact. And, you know, we all saw how the Act 46 process played out. It was very painful. It was a hugely distracting topic for a couple of years. And the benefits are kind of unclear at this point, whether or not it actually saved money, whether or not it actually improved outcomes. And there are other things we think that will have a more direct impact on both of those things that the legislature could potentially be spending time on instead of trying to go after small schools.
But at the same time, isn't it really expensive to educate kids in a tiny school when they only have just a handful of students and the staff level you have to pay to, you know, there's almost more educators than there are students or more support staff. Isn't it still expensive to run one of the tiny schools?
You would think so. Like, that's kind of, you know, our 21st century mindset of, like, bigger is better, right? You must gain efficiencies when you go to a larger system. But oftentimes with a larger system, you have less control or less insight into where dollars are actually going. And a lot of those, you know, efficiencies of scale we've already gained through supervisory unions. So we do like bulk purchasing and a lot of administrative tasks already at the supervisory union level. And this was true back in you know, even before Act 46, which is why we said really we should be looking at supervisory union consolidation, not school district consolidation, because most of the services that you are going to gain efficiencies with are already at the SU level. And we actually have quite a few SUs compared to most states. So that's perhaps a better place to look for efficiencies.
And so what do you think, I know you just mentioned that, as the legislature and the Ways and Means Committee is contemplating voting a bill out tomorrow, and the governor has weighed in from his side, concerned about they seem to be maybe backpedaling on something, on a bill that they were considering supporting. What if you had the Ways and Means Committee's ear? Maybe you do. What would you want them to be? What would be the bill you'd want them to come out with to still ensure quality of education for students and consideration of how expensive it is for taxpayers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, the direction that I would encourage the Ways and Means Committee and the House Education Committee to look at is how do we incentivize better spending habits and better outcomes regardless of the size of the school district, right? So that we have, you know, both large and small districts making good decisions. And I think that really goes back to the incentives that are currently built into the system. So as of today, the only check on spending in the system is local property tax rates. And we've heard a lot of people say those are disconnected or are too disconnected from spending decisions. So finding ways to strengthen that connection, we have a few ideas on how to do that. But I think the other thing, too, is we also have no accountability for outcomes. Like, we rarely even look at our outcomes. We just assume that we have good ones. And unfortunately, you know, our standardized test scores have been declining for almost a decade, and there's no, you know, accountability mechanism that the agency or even really voters, to be honest, have to go back and say, you're not performing at the level that we expect, and you're particularly not performing at the level we expect given how much we're spending on education.
And I'm sure you followed what they're looking at in the Ways and Means Committee, and you just mentioned the attempt to reconnect local voters with their local spending decisions. One of the things they were looking at, I don't know if they're backing away from this or maybe just putting it into a task force or another study, is these educational opportunity payments, which seems to be basically that the state will give you X number of dollars per student in every district to provide, I don't know what, they may not use this term, but at least an adequate education. And then it would reconnect voters with their decisions by saying, if you want to go past that, at least this is my understanding of it, then you, in your district, you would pay for it directly. Do you like that idea?
I'm not opposed to that idea. I think there's a lot of nuance that comes with that, though. And we had something similar to this back in the 90s. It was called the foundation formula.
Right.
That's essentially what they're bringing back here, is the foundation formula. I think we need to understand that a little bit better. One of the things I did like in that House Ways and Means bill is new ballot language that really clarifies the impact of a voter's decision on their property tax rate. So it includes an estimated property tax rate based on the December letter from the tax commissioner. And I think that's a good decision, because right now it's really hard for voters to understand, based on the current ballot language, what the impact of their vote actually is. It's like, okay, so this increase in spending is a 5% increase, but, you know, this year we're seeing a lot of, you know, 5% increases in spending that are causing 15% increases in property tax rates, right? So, you know, and that's not all because of one particular district, but it helps people understand what the impact is actually going to be. And the other thing I think that was positive in the Ways and Means Committee did in their first bill anyway, was bring back the excess spending penalty. It's a little bit different format. I'm not sure how much I like the new format, but I think it's a good thing we can do as an intermediate step to, like, start locking down spending while we figure out some longer term issues.
So do you think, and again, we're talking to Ben Kinsley from Campaign for Vermont. We're talking about small schools, but about the big elephant in the room, the property tax increases that we're all looking at, if nothing's done to change that trajectory. If you've got a question for Ben, give us a call on the McKenzie Country Classic Hotline, 888-414-0303.
Ben, in the discussion, you know, and particularly I think I agree with you about the small school thing, the problem is all of the mandated, and I, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say non-educational functions that the education financing now. And we were talking to Doug Racine last week. Do you see a formula that would involve just Health and Human Services or another agency stepping up and saying, these are really in our purview and these ought to be coming out of our budget? Do you see any concept of that even?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, to go back to, like, something that Kurt said earlier about the foundation formula or the, you know, education opportunity credit, whatever we want to call it, I think a potentially better approach is to use categorical aid more aggressively as a state. We use it for special education right now, but that's targeted dollars that are earmarked for specific things. So it's not a blank check to school districts. It's a, you have to spend it on X, Y, and Z. And another, like, easy application of where this should be spent. percent is universal school meals is a clear one that was an unfunded mandate from the state. And really, we should be providing categorical aid for that program. And I think mental health falls into the same category where, you know, there's an argument. The teachers union is arguing that our mental health system in the state has failed, and that is shifting costs onto school districts. There's probably some truth to that, but we don't have a great way to quantify it, and we haven't even heard from mental health agencies to hear their side of the story. So I think that there's certainly a conversation to have there about how do we target aid more specifically without writing a blank check, and, you know, still support some of these programs that as a society we've determined are necessary.
All right. Well, we just have to take a real quick two-minute break. We're talking to Ben Kinsley from Campaign for Vermont. If you want to join the conversation after the break, 888-414-0303. Mackenzie Country Classic Hotline is open, and we'll be...
Every morning, Kurt and Anthony keep you in touch with your community with the Morning Drive on News Talk WVMT.
Welcome back to the Morning Drive, everybody. Kurt and Anthony here as we head toward the finish line on this Monday. We're just starting the week out, and we're talking to Ben Kinsley from Campaign for Vermont. We're talking about the legislative session. We're talking about education finance. If you've got a question for Ben, give us a call on the Mackenzie Country Classic Hotline, 888-414-0303. Ben, I know in the letter that you wrote to the committee from Campaign for Vermont, you talk about the task force that may be forming. And you talked about how you would strongly urge it to weight it towards people outside the education system. Can you talk about what's your concern there?
Yeah, the concern, it's not so much a concern as more of an opportunity. I think, you know, we saw the effectiveness of some of the blue ribbon commissions that we had back in the early 2010s. And I think those were effective at bringing forward new ideas and looking at things in new ways, largely because the whole structure of those commissions, what the whole concept was to take people that were outside of a particular discipline and had a different approach than the folks that deal with a particular area every day. So, you know, for example, in this case, we'd be talking about education policy. And if we wanted that outside perspective and fresh thinking, you know, take someone that, you know, is perhaps finance, but not education finance, and let's tap them as a resource to sit on some of these commissions. And not that you can't have folks that are, you know, education specific, but it fosters new ideas if you have folks that are outside, or even if we could leverage some expertise from neighboring states or even national expertise on some of these things that, you know, again, you know, we all like to say our education system is unique, and it is, but sometimes we need to get outside of that system in order to find some good ideas and some solutions. And I think, you know, I think that's what we need to do in this case. And a lot of the people that I see getting put on these two committees are kind of the usual folks you'd expect. And, you know, looks a lot like the Act 46 study committees, if you ask me.
And really, we've had those kind of studies and task forces in the past. And you could just pull out one of the previous studies if you wanted to go that direction. I mean, that's kind of what I sense and feel people's frustration is, like, another study?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's we've had numerous studies over the past decade or so that have looked at this. Two different studies from an independent consulting firm, one in 2012, one in 2016. We've had the UVM study for weighting, which they're now considering even rolling back. And, you know, those are, we've studied this. What we really need are new ideas. And when I look at the structure of what they're setting up, you know, these are the same people that gave us the system we have today. So are they really the people that are going to give us the system we need for tomorrow, is my question.
And Ben, did you and Campaign Vermont get a chance to go into the committees, and as you did earlier in the session earlier this year, told us about the results of the poll that Campaign for Vermont did. Did you get a chance to go into the committee and share some of those results with the committee?
Yeah, we have shared those results with several committees and also individual legislators on those committees. So we've been talking to a number of them throughout this process. And, you know, I think one of the things we really highlighted is not only there's a shift happening. We saw some of those numbers in the poll that we did in October that showed that people are starting to view the quality of our education not as favorably as we used to in our state. And I think, you know, when you combine that with a property tax rate that was increasing 20% on average, you know, it's not surprising that we've seen dozens of school budgets go down because, you know, people are starting to feel like, hey, we've got, you know, we're paying more and more and getting less and less for it, and something needs to change. And I think that really is framed the whole conversation that's been happening over the last couple months.
And of course, your poll was done before the projection came out that we were looking at an 18 and then a 20% property tax increase.
Right. Yeah, that was even before we knew what the increase is going to be. And I think one of the key things that we found there was that families that had kids in the school district had an even more unfavorable opinion of the quality of education being provided in our public schools than the general public did. So, like, those parents knew something that the rest of us potentially didn't know. And that sort of also reflected, again, in the standardized test data that's been going backwards for almost a decade now, at least since 2016.
I just want to ask specifically about the House Ways and Means Committee. Have you had an opportunity to testify in front of them?
We have not testified in front of Ways and Means. We have testified in front of Senate Finance, but we've been in communication with members on both of those committees fairly regularly.
And Ben, are you, as we wind the session down in the last few weeks here, and everything that you're hearing in the Capitol and in the press, how hopeful are you that there will be an actual reform bill that makes it to the finish line?
I don't think we're going to get a wide sweeping reform bill this year. I think that my sense, and again, this is also kind of looking at how things played out with Act 46, because it was a very similar discussion, to be honest, that happened back in 2014 and 15. And my sense is that they're going to try to stay away from any of the really difficult decision-making. They're going to punt that mostly to these, right now it looks like two study committees that the House is putting together. They may make some tweaks. Like, I hope that they do the ballot language piece. I hope they do the excess spending penalty in some form. Those are the things that we
let's see if we
expect.
Get one quick phone call in for you.
Real quick, we got time for a quick call. Good morning. You're live on the Morning Drive.
Good morning. Tomorrow morning, I'll be voting on my school budget. I'm not impressed by the changes that they made. So, what's the end game here? Are we just going to keep voting no? Well, what happens if we all vote no forever?
Well, there is a process, right? If you vote no and there's a revote, then there's a date where if you haven't got a budget, you go back to some percentage of the previous budget, right? We're almost out of time.
Yeah. Yep. There is a default budget that you revert to, which is 87% of the prior year budget. That's pretty drastic. It's a pretty big stick. You know, so I think school boards will just have to keep bringing forward new budgets until it finally passes, you know, and it's a really unfortunate situation. And it's like it's sort of a little bit of the tragedy of the commons. It's not one particular thing you can point at. It's the system that we've set up that has incentivized and landed us in the position that we're in.
All right. Ben Kinsley from Campaign for Vermont. Thanks for being on the Morning Drive today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. You can always go to campaignforvermont.org and sign up to follow them on their newsletter. It's very interesting. Big show tomorrow, too, Kurt.
We're going to hear from our friend Sharon from Snowflake Chocolate, and we're going to hear from Cade Barkham and his dad, Dennis.
All right, we'll be back right here on News Talk WVMT.
From ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Donald Trump's motorcade is about to arrive at the Lower Manhattan Courthouse, where the former president will stand trial in his criminal hush money case. ABC's Aaron Katursky is there.
Prosecutors put Trump at the center of an alleged scheme to bury damaging stories before the 2016 election with the help of David Pecker at the National Enquirer. He now has an immunity agreement with prosecutors. The